Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Yay. So, hello, I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me to make a podcast is Jamie Thomas.
Hello.
And Anthony Evans.
Good evening. Or morning, or afternoon, if that's when you're listening.
I don't know if you need to cover all bases. The internet has no time of day. The internet spans all time. Up until like 97 or something. It doesn't go backwards. Anyway, you covered all the bases. Thank you, Anthony.
No problem.
Thank-tony.
Thank-tony? Oh dear. Before the podcast derails at an early stage. So, you know, if you don't know, we're a podcast where we chat about films and you just listen to it. It's easy. It's that simple. The film that we have got to talk about this week was chosen by Jamie and is called, I want to say, Noroi the Curse, which is what the Western title for it is. It could just be called The Curse Where You Are or Noroi, I don't know.
It says on IMDb the original title is Noroi, so I'm assuming that means curse and I'm not going to be culturally sensitive enough to go and look it up.
Well, we were discussing pre-podcast what Noroi meant, and we didn't get anywhere very definite, so we don't know. It doesn't come up in the film, that word,
no.
Noroi, does it? You think it'd be called whatever the word is for the demon that it's mainly about? The Jabberwocky, or... I can't remember. Was it Jabberwocky? It wasn't Jabberwocky.
Hagutabe.
Sorry?
Hagutabe.
You have to say in a low voice.
Hagutabe.
Hagutabe. No. Saying it wrong.
Yeah, so Jamie, you know, can you tell the listener what the film is briefly about and also name drop the makers of the film?
Okay. Noroi, the Curse.
Noroi. No, don't do it, Roy!
Is from 2005. It's directed by Koji Shiriashi, who actually, all the films he's directed, I think he's done five, all fake documentaries about supernatural stuff.
Weird.
And this was his first. A documentary filmmaker explores seemingly unrelated paranormal incidents connected by the legend of an ancient demon called Kagutaba. It stars lots of Japanese people, including Hiroshi Aramata as guest on TV program. I don't recognize any of the actors in it, but what I didn't realize is that one of the main characters, who is an actress, who goes on a ghost hunt, that's one of the events that kicks off the whole story. She actually plays herself in this film
because she's playing an actress, isn't she?
Yeah, and she's playing who she is in like real life. So they were, I guess this was presented in the same way that like the Blair Witch Project originally was, as like a real. Or what is it? The Fourth Kind with Milla Jovovich.
Like, only it says directed by at the start, which kind of gives away that it's fiction.
Well, it says it was. Does it say Koji Shirashi's name, or does it say the guy Kobayashi, the main character?
I don't think so. I think it plays along that it's a real. Video for as long as it can. So the only like credits at the end are the actual guy in the film,
the camera the operator, film. And the guy. Yeah,
okay,
and it's presented as this guy Kobayashi, who is a humorously tubby Japanese man.
I don't know if he's humorously tubby. He's not tubby to the extent of that in itself. It's funny.
I don't know. You saw him like running around, kind of. But anyway,
he looks kind of jolly and interesting.
And he almost looks like a giant baby sometimes. But he's a documentary filmmaker who concentrates on paranormal and supernatural stuff. And he disappears after his house burns down. And then a tape with his name on it appears at his old distributor's office. So they put together what's on the tape, which is. Becomes this film. And it's an investigation that he ended up doing about a string of seemingly unrelated paranormal incidents that then tie together to do with this curse and this demon. And it's from a town in rural Japan that used to do a ceremony. I think it was every year to appease this demon that had been somehow like buried under the town, according to legend. But then the government decided they needed to build a dam there, so they moved everybody out of the village and flooded it out, so the ritual couldn't be done anymore. And this apparently pissed the demon off to the extent that in the last ritual, it possessed a woman who then left the village and went off to live in various places.
Hold up. Don't be... Because you are very succinctly summing up the film here. Yeah. There's a lot of points being covered.
Presumably,
at some point you went, damn, because he was gutted at the fact... Oh, God. I'm sorry. I tried to make a damn joke and it didn't work.
The thing about the film is that, like, it's quite long, and the first time you watch it, it's actually quite complicated because of the way it's put together. And I think it's a stylistic choice. Like, it's not one of the things about it that would I think put people off is that it's not very filmic. Like, it's not, it doesn't really have a flow in a like typical like movie sense. It comes across very much like footage kind of hastily stitched together to make sense of something strange.
Yeah, well, because it's an investigation of the paranormal, we're taken on a journey through the eyes of an investigator, and we're kind of discovering the mystery as the documentary maker would have. So yeah. I guess that's the form, isn't it? Is discovering what all these weird things that are happening are about and investigating different lines of, you know... where the story is going to go and stuff.
Yeah.
You're right, though. That whole thing about, like... You covered the bulk of it there. Like, that's an investigation. A guy has gone missing. People stitch together a tape and show, basically, what he found out about this weird stuff that was going
on. I think one of the things that I like about it, like, we haven't gotten into expectations yet or anything, but like it's got this feeling of being bigger than itself. Like, nothing is completely explained, and it's trying to make sense of something that is obviously like way beyond human experience. It's like for a Japanese film, like, I don't know if Lovecraft has ever been recognized, but it seems like a very kind of H.P. Lovecraft kind of, at least, background to the story.
All right, well, you mentioned expectations. We have started to babble on a bit without them, but I will ask, what were you expecting, Anthony, from Jamie's suggestion this time?
A number of different factors this time. First of all, Japanese horror film. I like Japanese horror films. I was kind of looking forward to it. But then I found out it was a found footage one, which I don't think I've actually seen... like a proper kind of horror found footage film that I was totally pleased with.
Yeah.
Because either they end up being really boring because they just have to be a fake, like a home recording kind of thing, or that it's just too ridiculous and this is no way this could be a found footage thing.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Those are the two kind of problems I usually have with found footage. So coming in, I was optimistic because it is Japanese, and generally they don't let us down.
Yeah, they're good at animated weirdness, and they're good at big monsters smashing things, and they're good at, you know, dark horror weirdness as well. I'm sure they're good at other stuff, but those are the genres they're known for. What I was expecting was a slightly taxing film, because I was like, oh, dude, it's 2 hours and it's found footage. And I had some reservations about them, like similar to Anthony's. But generally speaking, it's just that students often do found footage films because they're so easy to make. The horror is in not producing much of anything. It's all about stupid people blogging at you, usually with like bad camera skills on purpose. And sometimes they're quite irritating. So I was a bit worried at the length of a found footage film being 2 hours. And I'm not a fan of horror, so I was not very interested from the start. But, you know, I was up for trying something I don't usually watch and giving it a go. Why did you come across this, JB?
I've actually seen this two or three times, and it's... I don't remember how I found it. I could talk about, like, found footage and stuff a little bit. I there's a distinction here between found footage and mockumentary or fake documentaries. Because found footage is the one that is, like, almost universally shit. Because it is, like, amateur filmmakers going, oh yeah, we're going to make the next Blair Witch Project. Which, Blair Witch Project is one of my favourite horror films. I think it's great. But with its companion piece, The Curse of the Blair Witch, which is a fake documentary, like, they complement each other really well. Found footage, for the most part, is rubbish, because it's a bunch of kids who go, yeah, we can make another Blair Witch Project, and they just make some, like, just ass. Like, terrible rubbish that is just... It's not scary. It tries too hard to be amateurish, which is really frustrating to watch, because they shake the camera in the room and go...
If people are filming something because it's either paranormal or they want to enjoy themselves and they happen to come across something, they're going to try their best to get it. Like, no one sets out making it look terrible. They're going to film properly and make it look as cool as they can because they want their footage to be good.
And a lot of them, like, don't make sense because they start out as found footage, but then they start putting, like, music in, like, non-diegetic music, and, like...
They forget the rules of mockumentary, yeah.
And it's an oversaturated, lazy genre for the most part, but...
At least when horror's concerned and sci-fi and stuff. Yeah. But actually, with comedy, it's become a kind of sub-genre of comedy mockumentaries, you know.
It started really with, like, Spinal Tap. It just didn't take off the way it then did, like, after The Office and stuff in the late 90s and early 2000s. But so found footage horror movies are very, very hit and miss, and they're mostly miss.
Mm. But you're a fan of Blair Witch. Anthony, are you a fan of Blair Witch?
I feel like I might have been if I had been caught up in the whole Blair Witch thing.
When it was, like, a thing on the early days of the internet being promoted that way.
Yeah, but I watched it far later on, and like in and my house, and not on my own, and I don't know, it just didn't.
Ruined.
Yeah,
yeah, it never really did it for me for that same reason as well.
Yeah, well,
plus who are you kidding, guys? Like, if someone comes up with a ridiculous ghost story or the incredible, this is the truth, honestly, now, and it's like. It so isn't the truth. Who are you kidding? Like, that's the thing, is I can never take this is some found shit, you know, that I can't believe this happened, but it did. It's like, no, it didn't.
Lot of people fell for it with the Blair Witch Project.
A lot of people are mugs. A lot of people believe in ghosts, Jamie. A lot of people actually in this day and age believe in ghosts.
That is true.
Mugs.
Anyway, what I was saying was found footage, for the most part, is oversaturated and most of it is shit, but... Fake documentaries are different. They're lumped in, but I actually think the more like mockumentary horrors that I've seen, the majority of them have been good. Like most, because it's not something that people do, and I think people are scared to do it a lot of the time because you have to. If you're going to make it a documentary, you're going to have to like interview your characters throughout, so you're going to know going in who dies and who doesn't.
Right.
So you have to be. Especially on point with making it scary if the expectation of somebody possibly dying is taken away. Which puts, you know, it puts a challenge in front of the filmmaker then to make the scary stuff more effective. There's another one that I really like. It's more recent, called Lake Mungo, which is Australian. And it's a really, like, just insidiously unsettling and creepy. And that's the other thing, like, fake documentaries like this, or Lake Mungo, or The Curse of the Blair Witch, they don't rely on jump scares, which a lot of horror does now, and a lot of found footage does, and I'm sick of that shit.
I was relieved it wasn't about that. It was more about intrigue and discovery, rather than going, look, it's all quiet for a minute, they're going to crap you up. And then sometimes it did, but only in it was eerie.
Well, that's what I liked. Like a slow burn, and then something really quiet, but not right happens. Anyway, I watched this because I realized it was a fake, you know, ghost story documentary, and it was Japanese, and a lot of Asian horror generally, Japanese, Korean in particular, there's just something about their cultures that they really know how to like shit you up. Like, there's something there's something really upsetting about their like ghost stories that ours don't seem to have. Maybe it's because it's different, I don't know. And also what I liked about this is it didn't have a little girl with long hair.
Well, it did have a little boy.
I know, but he didn't have long hair covering his face. Like, every single
I would say
major
it's still,
Japanese.
It still plays around with that concept, which so like horror films love that idea of an innocent child being evil because it's unsettling.
But I think I watched it the first time and I was along for the ride because I was like, what's going to happen next? Like, what is he uncovering? Because the actual plot and what's going on is so dense, and everything new it uncovers just makes things stranger.
Yeah.
And to me, at least, like, the creepy parts are really effective because this is exactly the kind of stuff that scares me. Like, jump scares and all that kind of stuff, they just annoy me. But stuff like this, like, the examples of, like, creepy shit that happens in this film is the kind of stuff that, like...
Yeah.
At the time happens, and I go, ooh, and then a couple of hours after watching the film, particularly if it's at night and I'm up by myself, I'm like, I can't look out the window.
Like, well, it's also got that formula that ghost hunting shows have, which is watching people kind of scare themselves. In this case, most of the people get scared because something genuinely paranormal happens, which, you know, never happens in TV shows. Like, but, for, you know, in terms of you're watching people who are a little bit nervous investigate something and they don't know whether they're kind of curious, and then they'll come across the weird and creepy things and you'll be on edge, perhaps, with the people who are there reacting to it.
But I think the reason I've seen it a few times and that I picked it for this is because it's unique in that, like I was saying before, it's not... It doesn't seem like it's made for anyone. Like, he made whatever film he wanted to make. Like, he tried to make it as much like an actual, hastily cobbled together, kind of panicked investigation that he could, without anything in mind of, like, making it like other films in the genre so it would sell or whatever. Because it's not even available on DVD outside of Japan anywhere.
You could just order the tape cassette.
Yeah. Mm. And it was a... It got a lot of positive reviews in Japan when it came out, but it's still like a cult film. Like it's not a major. Like a lot of the positivity it got was that it was very different from other Japanese horror films.
Okay.
Yeah, I just want to mention as well when I was talking about the fact that when you do a fake documentary, a lot of the time characters who clearly don't die are right at the start of the film talking about what happened. The tagline for this film is "Everybody died," which is
I felt bad for the guy because he seems so jovial and nice, and you know he seems like a nice guy, the documentary maker, and it's like you're dead, mate. Your wife's dead. She burnt. We were told. Sad.
What? One of the things I like about this is that the characters in it, as strange as they are all they all come across as actual people, and they're all quite likable and quite tragic. Like, is it Hori? Mr. Hori, the crazy
tin
psychic?
Tinfoil-covered nutjob psychic. Super psychic, I think they called him.
Yeah,
super
I feel
psychic.
So bad for him, because like, he's being interviewed by TV shows, clearly taking the piss out of this guy who's actually genuinely got something scary and insane going on. He also, because you know, like, thousands, millions of people claim to be psychic, and it's a fucking racket where they just make money off rubes. But his character, that to me seems like what would happen to someone if they were genuinely psychic.
Yeah, they wouldn't function. They would because he came across like he was mentally ill. Yeah. He's got his house filled with flyers and notes to himself, and he talks about weird gummy worms or something coming and eating people.
Ectoplasmic worms.
Of course, yeah, sorry. And he's covered in tin. He looked quite good in his... I liked his tinfoil coat and his little hat. It was like a fisherman's cap type thing. And it wasn't pure... They weren't just made of tinfoil. They were on a pre-existing item of clothes.
Yeah.
I thought he rocked the tinfoil better than lots of nutjobs do.
That actor, the first time I watched it, I actually thought they had cast somebody who had some kind of like disability to try and get...
He had his weird gestures and his behavior, and his body movement. Yeah.
Apparently, he's just very good at playing people who are completely mental.
It was very intriguing. He was unsettling as well because at times this character, you don't know what he's on about, but he's quite aggressive. He would often try and attack people he perceived as being linked to this demon. And this is the thing with the genre, or this particular film anyway, is it's under the presumption that It lives in the universe where, okay, psychics exist and they're not necessarily real, but all of the people who are psychic in this are actually spot on. They actually know stuff. It's kind of a bit weird in that. Wait, so are all psychics in the know?
No,
that is these ones are happen to be correct.
That is a kind of horror movie cliche, though. Actually, not just a horror movie cliche, an any kind of movie cliche.
Yeah,
that like if there is, there's no real doubt that is a psychic. If you know what I mean.
There's never a charlatan in a film, is there? Unless it's part of the major.
You have to remember
plot.
That this film that you are watching. You know, in the universe of the, you know, is made by a documentary maker who focuses on the supernatural. So it's going to present everything as it's all real because it's made by someone who investigates that stuff.
Yeah, but all the psychics weren't, you know, trying to make a huge living off of it. They had weird visions that they couldn't explain. Like they weren't like we can predict the future accurately. It's like there's what we got. Who are we dealing with? Three main psychic characters.
Yeah. And
little girl, is it? Let's just cover them just for the sake of clarity.
Kanna, the little girl.
She does a TV experiment where a group of kids are being tested on their special psychic abilities, like drawing images that are hidden in a box. Yeah. And she gets them like spot on, and she gets one wrong, but it's got a like creepy face, which is the face of the demon demask thing that is in the film. And then she also makes water materialize in a beaker.
Yeah, it's from the dam with newborn baby hairs in it,
cluing us into what it's all about, which I'm sure we'll get to. Yeah, so she's one, and then we've got an actress who's playing.
Herself.
Does this actress think she has magic abilities?
I don't think. I think it's that she does without realizing it.
Oh, like the real actress who is acting in this film. It would be interesting if she thought that.
Because they do. When they first introduce her, she's going with those two exceptionally ugly guys.
Oh, that's harsh. That's a bit harsh.
They're
just teenagery looking dudes.
But give him
a break.
Like a ghost hunt, and she's talking about how she's had supernatural experiences her whole life. But it's presented as the typical kind of, like, the Japanese Most Haunted. Like, people would watch it and be like, yeah, bullshit, whatever. Like,
yeah, because one of the... It's weird. This is one of my qualms with some of the storytelling that came up early on. So there's this girl, she's an actor, she's an actress, actor, whatever... and she's all her life has dealt with paranormally stuff and visions and feeling weird sensations and things. And it's just been investigated a bit for a TV show. She's had interviews and whatnot. But the thing they leave out of the TV broadcast, they show to us in this mockumentary, whatever, is footage they didn't use. And it was like, what, she gets a bit scared and freaks out in the woods with these two questionable-looking teenage guys. Not only did they leave that out, which was really exciting and interesting, but the director, who gave the tape to the girl afterwards when they didn't use it, decided to cut out the most disturbing bit where a silhouette is inexplicably in the background and isn't there. The actual, evidence of essentially the outline of what could be some kind of creepy ghost or demon. Just the outline of this creepy man that she said was there, and, you know, they're focusing in on the goop and stuff that was on the trees, probably just sap. But that's surely the most interesting thing that's ever happened and should be broadcasted and should have been in international news. I don't know.
Well, no, because if you look around anywhere, there's tons of shit like that all over YouTube and a real ghost caught on foot, you know, caught on camera and stuff. And it's only significant in the context of the film that this guy has made.
Well, the answer to all people who love ghosts, unlike me, who does not believe in them, and is very adamant that people who believe in ghosts should shut up about it because they're stupid. But people who do believe in ghosts, you know, they must get tired of people just going, "Oh, it's easily photoshopped, isn't it?" You know, it's like, well, you know, we can do so much with technology, and all these fictional films, they make it happen, and it's an illusion. But it must get tiring for people who have evidence of the paranormal, and everyone's just like, "Ah, nah," I do feel occasionally, if they have something less flimsy than something that's not just orbs, something that's genuinely weird. Yeah. If you've, you know, if you, because people can hear stuff in recordings which this film does a little bit. And that's that's something that happens. We hear what we want to hear. But you know, if you find evidence that's really weird,
it's strange. Like I'm not really a believer in like ghosts or the supernatural, but I will find myself sitting sometimes for like 2 hours on YouTube just looking up ghost footage and listening to EVP recordings and just freaking myself out completely. Because it does, like, for some reason, even though I'm not, like, in a real-life context a believer in that kind of stuff, in a fictional context, it's that stuff that scares me. Like, apparitions appearing in the background of pictures or, like, voices being picked up on tape shits me right up.
I mean, paranormal stuff happens. That the stuff that we can't explain happens, whether it's, like, UFOs or... you know, sightings of, like, what we call ghosts. I just won't go as far as to say that it's is the spirit of a dead person who's caught between here and heaven. Or like, I'm not going to... like, it's weird. Paranormal happens. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, you know, come on, don't be silly. But in the case of this film, one of the pieces of grammar I found irritating is the most important part of the footage was being suppressed casually. Anthony, what did you think? Would you question the fact that the director held back this part of the footage?
Well, before I answer that, I just wanted to say, similar thing to Jamie, that I have a weird kind of guilty pleasure for watching like these kind of paranormal ghost or like unsolved mysteries kind of things that they always show at like late on Sunday evenings. And even though, again, I don't believe in any of it, I don't know, you just get a kind of weird guilty pleasure from kind of indulging.
Like, as long as you let go and just go with it, it can be really scary and engaging. Yeah.
Well, there's nothing more scary than being in your kitchen at night time, staring out into the darkness and going, what if something scary just, in my face right now. And you almost can't look out into the darkness. And it's like, all there's ever going to be is like a fox or a cat, and I'm just scaring myself. You know, everyone likes, it's something human in trying to scare yourself, I think.
But back to the other question. I suppose Japanese society is probably a bit more like paranormal believing than most. So I can kind of believe that they would leave it out. I mean, it is something weird and unexplainable, and
but that's what they were after, really.
Yeah, why would they leave it out?
They just what do they keep, the studio stuff? I don't know.
They did say
that they left it out so they didn't like kind of damage the woman anymore.
Because it was too traumatic for her. So they
But don't show it to her. Show it to like I don't know whatever.
But that kind of brings one of the things that I like about this, and is that it's a fake documentary, but it's always kind of sticking to those rules, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And to me, it kind of felt like those shows that you kind of watch late at night and don't really believe in kind of thing.
Because one of the criticisms that you could put, like, levy against it is the fact that things happen in the way it's made to, like, amp up how creepy it is. Like, sometimes there's a score, there's, like, creepy music, or something will happen, and then there's like a slow motion replay with like creepy noises over it, and you're like, "Well, but that's the thing. If it was found footage, yeah, that stuff wouldn't make sense. And people do make that mistake with found footage. But this is a fake documentary made by a guy who makes documentaries about the supernatural. Mm. Even if he's cobbling this together from some shack he's living in now because of what happened to him, his instincts as a like someone who makes documentaries about creepy stuff are still going to be there, and he's still going to want to like." Make it like scary, or it might be that it was put together by like the footage was put together by his the publishing company, because he sent them the tape.
I took it that the last piece of footage he sends when he after he's gone missing, he kind of he has some footage to explain what happened.
Right,
that was sent by him when he's gone, but the whole thing was put together as a continuation of his documentary books, and then you know.
Yeah, you're right. So that's why it is in that style of like amping up how creepy it is, because it would be, and it is very much like the ghost documentary TV shows you just get on TV. I thought it was a very like faithful recreation of that kind of thing.
what we've done as a podcast as well is, I don't know if you can hear it, listener, but if you put our voices down and you're listening back, download the file, and if you put up the background noise, you will hear a child occasionally making noises in the background. And that's how much effort we've put in, is we've actually paid a ghost to be in Jamie's house making noises of an innocent child, just to freak you out. Just because if you thought, you know, why aren't they referencing the child? We're clever and are putting it in for that reason.
Just as an example of how effective this kind of rubbish is. I watched this yesterday evening. I have a 7-year-old child in the house, and he was asleep, and I watched this in the evening. And then when I went to bed last night, I had a nightmare about him. So, and then he woke me up this morning looking for his glasses as I was in the middle of that nightmare, and he scared the shit out of me.
But then, to be fair, he had blood on his face, and his eyes were sort of black and expanded. Yeah. And
he'd murdered several cats. Like, they were all over the house.
Weird. Before I derailed this, I guess what I would say in a positive light is I did find the story and the investigation interesting. As we got shown bits, and the guy was going, oh, that's really weird, let's follow this up. And, you know, in real life, they try to make this documentary, they'd come up to kind of loads of problems where nothing exciting would happen, but luckily it's fiction, so exciting things happen, and we're like, how did that happen? Who are these people? Why are they connected? What's the mystery? And I liked following the path that the documentary maker went on, and I think it gave just enough of everything. It didn't spoil us too much. At the end, it kind of went, look, we're going to show you some proper paranormal crap now. Look, the kids are all injured but fine, and there's a ghost, and someone's going to set themselves on fire. Oh, it's scary, you know.
Well,
like, it properly, you know, went, we're going to show you some stuff, but it did it in small bits.
Even though it essentially explains at the end what, like, actually physically happened, there's still a ton of stuff that is left. What the hell are the ectoplasmic worms?
This is actually it does leave a lot of unanswered questions, and you're kind of saying that's a good thing in a way, and leaves a mystery and leaves almost the potential for more investigation. But for me, it had too many things that are just creepy things they wanted to put in and aren't connected. Like, they mentioned the goopy worm junk, and they also have all these other people. Like, there's an incident where lots of innocent people hang themselves.
Yeah.
All strangers meet up and hang themselves, and it's tied in. It's like, well who are these other people? They don't really explain some of the stuff they add in, you know?
They lived where the woman lived, the woman who was possessed by the demon. They lived where she lived, and that affected them. Like, or they lived where something that was happening, because she was trying to summon the demon in a physical form. Like, he was using her to come into the real world, so that's why she got that job where she would have access to embryos and fetuses, and she would take a kid and she needed a medium, and she would feed them the babies.
Creepy.
Yeah, she would feed the medium the babies as a way to get the demon into the real world. But
okay, hang on, because I have things we need to talk about with this, and we haven't really, you know, we got one more medium to talk about, and then there's the main woman you're talking about now, who is the key to all of the mystery, I suppose.
Yeah.
And before we get into feeding dead embryos to mediums and stuff, I think we should say, we established that the documentary maker is investigating these people with paranormal abilities, and it's two psychics who are women. One is a young girl, one is an actress who's having weird experiences, and then the third guy, Mr. Horry, is a mentally ill nutjob who wears tin foil and lives in a weird little house. And it's kind of weird he hasn't already been put into a sort of institution before they meet him in the film. But he's a proper crazy, don't know what he's talking about guy. And they are the first people to get investigated, all part of TV shows and follow-up documentary makers coming and meeting them again. And then this leads on to this greater mystery about a village who used to have a ceremony that dealt with a demon, and possibly a woman who became possessed in the last attempt to do the ceremony. Like, and they start, we're piecing together this story of essentially the daughter of a priest or a sorcerer or something, or what was the guy who did the ritual in the village?
He was the local priest.
Yeah, he was a priest.
So a priest's daughter in a ritual that is supposed to keep a demon at bay from an old culture of, like an ancient, like an old-fashioned village that had a belief in sorcery and stuff and all this, and they had a ritual that they did the last time because their village was going to get put under, like, demolished and put as, like, the base of a dam or whatever. She basically got possessed by a demon in that ritual because it was pissed off or something.
It was angry because it knew that the ritual wasn't going to be performed anymore.
Yeah, and basically we're finding out that this woman has presumably been working all along for this demon and spent, they could have got a career in nursing so she'd have access to, so embryos and aborted fetuses that she would sacrifice or give to this
psychics.
Demon. So she needed a psychic, which was the little girl in the case of this story, and she would feed, she would, you know, give these to the demon as, because the ancient ritual involved baby monkeys being sacrificed to a demon? What was the deal with that?
Where's she going to get baby monkeys from?
I know, next best thing. Dead children. Unborn dead children. Yeah. See, it is funny, right? It's got dead monkeys and dead baby children. What could be more hilarious? But, like, so the you know, old traditional stuff is always weird because people of the past were a lot crazier sometimes than we were. And they have a ritual where there's a demon. Like, I don't know. It's to do with mythology. I don't understand. The Japanese must have lots of different demons and stuff in their culture.
I think that this particular piece of mythology and, like, legend is completely made up for the film, but it's not that far removed from... In fact, if anything, it's quite subtle compared to the completely fucking insane ghost stories from traditional Japan.
Sure.
About, you know, women with long tongues who eat you inside out through your ass and all that kind of stuff. So, like, this is why, like, Japanese in particular ghost stories and horror films are so frightening, because their folk tales are so frightening. They have a very good basis.
And it's like there's these we established there was a village brought up around sorcerers who you know, worshipped. I don't know, they somehow try to use this demon and conjure him, but it went wrong, and then they had to banish him, and then problems and traditional ceremonies to keep people at bay. Anthony, what did you think of this whole, like, backstory? What did you piece together and make of the whole, I guess, the traditional backstory, rather than the how it panned out?
You mean the story rather than the plot?
The demon, the weird tapestry that implied monkeys needed to be sacrificed and stuff?
I don't know. I thought it was all fine and standard. It's kind of, this is what... Like, that's like the core element of Japanese kind of horror, is the kind of weird, kind of folky-based supernatural tale. And I don't know, because of the length of the film and the way they kind of draw out the mystery, I think it was kind of really kind of acceptable, and I think it worked. I don't think...
You're not left going, what the hell is this with the dead monkeys? And why is there a village of weirdos?
That feeling is part of why you're watching a kind of documentary horror film anyway.
Yeah.
It's because you want to kind of find out the weird kind of mystery behind it. Yeah. I don't think it was particularly out there. I mean,
but I know. I think it's because coming from a sort of the sort of European approach is usually linked to Catholicism and the devil.
Yeah,
and we know the rules of God and the devil has other demons, perhaps. And we kind of get that kind of culture a bit more because it's good and evil. Whereas this one was like, well, there's a demon, and the people of the village aren't evil. They're not, you know, worshipping the demon. They're trying to keep it at bay, but for some reason, the way they keep it at bay is to sacrifice baby monkeys, and then later on, like, we don't really get clued in as to why the demon devours the corpses of creature, like babies and humans and stuff. And what, we don't really get why. We don't know. We don't. But they don't say, "Oh, it is evil, and its purpose is this." It's just a kind of general demon.
I don't know. It's weirder. The impression we get of it is pretty evil. Look at its face. I know you shouldn't, you know, judge a book by its cover, but when something's got like a giant head with two huge black eyes and nothing else.
Yeah, and a little black mouth, and it kind of something babyish about its face. And it's covered in like red paint.
This
and,
is like, I know, yeah, I don't
a little
know,
horn it might, and stuff.
Yeah. It might just be me, but the design, the appearance of the demon's face, freaked me out. Like the
it's because it kind of looks like all the, because it's linked to like all these dead, children. It kind of looks like a dead child as well. So it's kind of weird.
There's a couple of scenes where it's used reasonably subtly. There's one where Hori the psychic freaks out, and the footage that they're filming distorts, and there's the hundreds of like weird ghost baby faces on the camera, and then they replay it and they slow it down, and you can hear what sounds like a bunch of babies crying at the same time, but it's all like distorted.
Well, I think it does, it taps into that tragically sad notion that think of all the like like just think about how many like aborted fetuses that didn't
also
grow
the,
up. They're so
possibly
sad and weird.
One of the most disturbing images of the film towards the end when they run out and find the shrine in the forest and Hori flips out completely, and then Kobayashi puts the night vision on the camera, and Kana, the little girl who's been missing, is sitting amongst hundreds of crawling ghost fetuses who are crawling all over her, and she's just staring at the camera.
It's all kind of blue and like disturbing.
And then he turns the night vision off, and she's not there.
Yeah,
that was one of the points where I was like, I've got to pause this and go for a walk around the house.
It was that thing of if in that situation, you would void your entire bowels and just not like, and because you can't see it anymore, it's like, it's kind of, I kind of prefer it when I could see it, because then I can run. Now I can leap, and I could almost, there's nothing in this space, I think I'll give the nothingness a hug. I'm hugging it, and if I put the night vision on, I'll be hugging crawling fetuses. You know, it's just so like, I don't know, it taps into that genuinely disturbing.
Well, a lot of the like, there's creepy stuff like that in it that is that's like, you know, clearly in the context of the film supernatural, but a lot of the like really scary unsettling stuff is the things that people do rather than stuff that is seen. Like I can't remember her first name, but Ishii, the woman who was possessed, who's trying to summon the demon.
Yes,
every time she answers the door and is just like screaming in the filmmaker's face, and then just slams the door in
like
his face
how
again.
How dare you talk to me like that, or whatever.
Yeah, like that was really disturbing. And
well, creepy neighbors are great because you, even if you're in real life, if you have weird neighbors and you don't know what they're up to, like we had a guy who lived above us, me and Abby, used to live in a house that was split into two, and the guy upstairs would always make weird noises, and it was like, it was just dragging noises. We're like, does he just have coffins that he's moving about upstairs? It's like, it's just something about people you don't know what they're doing that you imbue with so much more creepiness.
It was also,
in her case, it was all legitimately super creepy.
I will say, though, that as creepy as she was, there was one point where she answers the door for like the second time much later in the film, and Kobayashi knocks the door, and you hear her like screaming up the hallway before she answers the door.
Yeah.
You just hear from behind it, and then she answers it and starts shouting at him. And I'm going to answer the door that way from now on.
Yeah.
They just hear me screaming up the house after they've knocked.
Yeah. What's interesting is they interviewed some of her colleagues as a nurse, and they all said she was just obsessed. She just did her work and was very quiet and slightly creepy. And you kind of think, you never get to see weird, like, possessed sorcerer ladies never just have a day job where they're seen regularly just at the vending machine, just getting a Kit Kat between shifts of snatching aborted fetuses away in your handbag.
That's another one as well, another like moment where someone just acts creepy, is when he interviews that neighbor, that the woman who worked with her and was in college with her, I think, and then said that like after the possession incident she got kind of weird and creepy, and then he asks about the demon,
and
she just pisses
off into her own house.
She just goes silent, gets up, walks away, and shuts the door, and that's it. Like that, and
It knows throughout how to do creepy, and lots of people who are to do with the mystery are like, well, we'd be scared, and we keep dogs to keep the demons away, and we all very hush-hush about the village problem we had.
When the young actress is staying with the filmmaker's wife, and she makes like dinner, and then she gets up to get something, and the wife puts the camera up on her after a minute, and she's just stood with her back to her, as if she's hanging by her neck, and just lets out this long, horrible like groan. That was another moment where I had to pause, have a minute to myself.
Anthony, any other bits? Because I think we're just plucking bits that creeped us out, which it did a lot. Are there any bits you want to highlight as creepy bits?
I think you've kind of mentioned a lot of them. I would say that the bit that Jamie mentioned with the kind of like aborted fetus ghosts kind of crawling all over, that was a really a good scene, because it kind of amps up the tension, because you've got like two sets of people kind of running through the woods and you don't want to know what's going to happen. And I felt that bit was a bit of a letdown, because it's the only kind of...
It is a bit CG.
Yeah, it's the only kind of effect shot there is, and it really stands out for it, and it kind of took me out a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
A similar thing with the video right at the end, the kind of the extra video that they get afterwards. Yeah. I don't know if it needed that. I mean, it explains kind of a lot, but I kind of felt the film might have been stronger if it kind of stopped before that and left the whole thing kind of a mystery.
We kind Although of assumed... There was some, sorry.
Well, right at the end, like that scene, there's the scene where the psychic comes in and then he starts beating like the child.
With a rock in the face.
Yeah, and then it's just kind of a bit of a scuffle, and you kind of turn around and the kid's just kind of standing there red-faced. And
he's got face at some point as well.
Yeah, it's the demon's face. His head has been like smashed into the shape of the demon's face for like a split second. You see literally the demon's face, and then it's gone, and it's just the kid with the bloody face again. See, you're saying that scared the shit out of me.
I'm not saying it didn't. I'm saying it did. It's just I felt that whole scene wasn't necessary. Yeah. And the bit where she pours, like his wife pours, like gasoline over herself really slowly, and she kind of takes her time, kind of setting light to herself. But that bit was really creepy.
Yeah,
but then, I would say we all kind of knew when it said at the start she burnt alive the house. You know, we were kind of thinking, well, this was caused by the demon, and we also get implications that people who got maybe either in the way or in some way bothered. The woman who was wasn't it Ichi, was it?
Ichi was her Ichi. Surname, yeah.
So this nurse who had been possessed, who was the main sort of villain or whatever, she would, you know, her neighbour mysteriously and had an accident with her child, and like she would affect the lives of other people.
But they
didn't really link it in to everything. It wasn't explicable. It was like, so in this case, someone was dispatched in a car accident, and in the case of the documentary maker's wife, she was possessed and set herself on fire. It's like, well, what's going on? Why are these all so distantly... Well, they're not really similar in MO, you know?
I think what that comes from is the idea of it being a demon, and it being obviously it's just malicious. Like, it's killing people who are even vaguely bothering its vessel.
Well, I guess the thing is, if you've caused documentary makers to come to the house and have, you know, brought attention where it's not wanted, then you should be dispatched or something. But I just found it, like, some stuff didn't really tie in. Like, they had nooses imagery being used, and the little face imagery of the demon was used, and some of this tied in to the rituals and things, and they had the scythes come up, and that was relevant. But then they had stuff like... Yeah, so pigeons are drawn to killing themselves when the demon's involved. Yeah. Like, the myth didn't involve pigeons, as far as I could tell.
Yeah, the pigeons were involved in the ritual.
Pigeons or dead monkeys?
No, when they find the shrine, there's the dead dogs, and there's also pieces of pigeons strung up on the string. So
something to do with the ritual
demons. to me, that's one of the strengths of the film, is all this weird stuff's happened and it's not all explained.
Yeah.
But it does, there is something going on that the documentary maker hasn't been able to, like, explain.
Yeah, there's a lot of unsolved.
He's been able to film it.
But not find answers. Yeah. Okay, because I took it, like, what is creepy? Dead birds are creepy. What is sad and creepy? Killing dogs is creepy. So I'm seeing, well, we got all these creepy things we want to put into a film. Well, and we're not, like, do you know, like, I just mean, from it's coming away from the story and the reason, like, there's still filmmakers who want to make a creepy film, and some of it felt to me a bit arbitrary. Like, I wanted it to tie in a little more cleverly,
I think that's just, like, the style of the film, like, the fact that it's, you know, some of the mysteries are answered.
Yeah.
And then some of them are just left. Because she has the kid at the very start of the film. It's not like he's born later on. He's like 9 or 10. Mm. So was he already the demon? Or had she kidnapped this kid and was like.
Was the kid
waiting?
Psychic and therefore a different medium that
she'd used earlier and on? Again, that's never explained. Like,
it's all. It's all terribly horrible and interesting. And you kind of want to make a follow up documentary. Even though, you know, it would be ludicrous. I mean, it didn't really happen, right, guys? Oh. It didn't happen, right, guys?
Speaking of you saying that the footage at the shrine looked too fake, and then follow-ups, the film that this guy made after this, which is called Occult, which is also a really interesting film, and if anything, more subtle with the supernatural stuff for the most part. Mm. And is good and worth watching, except the very end where...
Papa Smurf comes on and has a cameo.
May as well be. I'll spoil it to an extent.
It's really tonally wrong, is it? It's something really totally happens.
One of them dies on purpose because of reasons. Watch the film and you'll find out. But he takes a camera with him when he dies. But the camera's never recovered until one day, I think it's like a while later, I don't know if it's years later, the guy who was filming with him is in his house with someone else filming something else, and the camera appears, and they watch the tape, and it's footage from where the guy went after he died.
Right.
And he says, like, you hear him screaming, and he says, it's hell. Unfortunately, hell is a bunch of floating heads and worms that look like a Terry Gilliam cartoon from Monty Python. And that's the ending shot of the film.
Oh, dear.
And it's so hilariously terrible that it almost ruins the entire experience. But there's just, I don't know. I don't know if it is a deliberate stylistic choice for the director to make it almost look cartoony. Mm. I think he wants to make certain imagery that he puts in his films look like those old tapestries. From Japanese culture, you know, like the one that they unfurl at the end about the ritual. Like, I don't know if he's trying to create that kind of imagery.
Yeah, well, you know, so you're saying from this other film that you've talked about, that the guy, he makes a creepy film and then he's got an ending where, in Anthony's case, thought it was too much to, it didn't need it.
It didn't need it, yeah.
I agree, because I think it implied enough. We could have gone, oh yeah, I know what went on there. We know this was weird. We were all sort of suspecting the kid. We needed a little bit of confirmation, and I think it gave it to us, but it gave too much, really.
Yeah.
But also, I would argue, hang on, how did the documentary maker just adopt this random child he found and had seen a couple of times, like, peeking from a window previously? But they just adopt the kid, like, just all of a sudden. So we adopted him, and he never spoke to us, was uber creepy. And just seemed to enjoy egg omelette, but didn't like talking about it. I mean, it was a bit weird that they adopted the kid. It was also, there were sometimes, like many of these types of mockumentary things, it's like, so why did you guys put the camera on to film someone making you some food? I know it's good that she had a freak out and started making weird noises.
Hold on a minute now. Hold on a minute. You're talking like someone who's never been on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. How many fucking pictures of food make up the internet
that's
now?
That's true. But this was 2004, so
that's the thing. Have you ever kind of looked back at your old kind of like videotapes?
Yeah, gone, why did I film that?
And yeah, and it's just, they have no editing, first of all, so that's fine. And then sometimes it just, something will pop up and you go, why is that?
Yeah. Okay,
or like, why did I think this was interesting, or kind of thing?
Yeah.
So it's
that's most people's photographs, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay. So people film the banal, I will accept. Yeah. I will look back at my footage, and I'll look at my old footage hanging out with skaters trying to watch them like kick flip some steps outside the town hall, and I will look in the background for weird demons and things, just in case they're there, because it's worth checking your own footage. Look at the really banal stuff, and that's where the magic happens. But I don't know. And then also, one of the in there, once the documentary maker's proven a few things, at least to himself, he's getting the psychics around and wants to kind of end the curse they've established maybe there. And they have a whole little boating thing where they go out and do the ritual on the dam, on the lake where the dam is. I don't know. They sort of just guess, oh, it's probably about here, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know how precise you need to be. You couldn't have just done this from the dam. I mean, oh, whatever.
Well, no, they have to be where the shrine was in the village. That's another scene I liked, actually, which I'd forgotten about. Where they do that, they row out onto the lake and they do the ritual, and the filmmaker and the actress are in the boat, and then the psychic and the cameraman are on the dam, and it's cut in between the both of them. And they do the ritual, and she, like, there's a little hesitation where you're like, oh, something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
But then she, like, she feels tremendous relief, and she starts crying because of how, like, relieved she feels. And then it cuts back to the psychic, who is freaking out because he can see something terrible, and you don't know what it is. He mentions the worms, but you just see them on the lake, so you just can imagine some bizarre shit that he's seeing going on, because they've basically just made it worse.
It was good, and they don't really explain what went wrong, or like I don't know if it was their own hubris, or if in fact that did do something, and in killing the demon or doing something to doing the ritual could have meant the demon had to do something else to, you know, drove it to try and get into a new body or something. We don't know.
Yeah.
But I like that idea of psyching us out, because we're in the board watching and going, oh God, she's going to look up and she's going to be like a baby face or something. And she's fine. Actually, for a while, her hair's over her face. You mentioned little girls with hair on their face, as if it didn't happen, but it did a little bit, a young woman. And you kind of think, actually, is she bleeding? And it's like, no, it's just her hair. Yeah. She's all right. And it's kind of, and then having the freak out on the shore was kind of interesting as a nice switch up of the problem.
And then, that's what I mean. It's a this director, I'm the actual director, not in the story. He seems to have this fascination, because it's in that other film as well, Occult. I haven't seen any of his films after that, but he seems to have this fascination with the idea of like supernatural stuff happening, but it's all part of an entire, like, much bigger plane of existence that we can barely even conceive of. Sure. And even the stuff that we're seeing, like the stuff that we see on camera in this film or in Occult, is barely scratching the surface of what's actually going on, which is where you get references to, like, the worms and stuff.
Well, I personally wouldn't like to be... Like, I kind of like the tinfoil guy, and it's weird that he comes...
Yeah.
He's an authentically mentally ill-looking...
Yeah.
Character, like, you kind of buy into this guy, but you don't want to be him, do you? He's looking like he's having a tough time. He's always fighting off something that isn't there, and he's freaking out constantly. If he can see this part of this demonic world, if he sees that blue fetus crawling vision and like all of the weird stuff, it's like, man, horrible. I would not want to see it from his perspective.
I would rather not know what's going on cosmically.
He's done very well not to kill himself with that stuff going on.
Well, that's the idea, is that because he says about the worms are everywhere all the time, and he can see them, but other people can't, and they just, like, they're coming down, they're taking people away.
Yeah,
but, like, the idea that all this
worms,
stuff is
no, there weren't any flipping worms in it. It's just another inconsistency. The worms didn't eat the girl; she was kidnapped.
Well, that's what I mean. There's something else going on that we're never, like, privy to. But it's there in the imagery. The loops that they make, the long lines of loops, what are they? Or the drawing of, like, the black dots all joined together with lines that go on and on forever. Like, to me, that was, like, in my mind when I watched it, that's what he's talking about when he's talking about the worms, whatever that is people are drawing.
You can interpret a lot from, like, you know, it does tie in. But I one of my qualms is that I maybe need a few more questions answered. And I kind of prefer things that have more of a, everything ties in and concludes better. You could still have some ambiguity, obviously.
I think that might be like to do with the fact that you said you're not a big fan of horror anyway.
Sure.
And a lot of like for people who like are like I am, and the better ones, the ones that I like best, are the ones that leave more questions or raise more questions than answers. As long as to me those questions are consistent, like they're not just thrown in there for the sake of it, which I don't think stuff in here is.
I would say maybe it is, because, you know, some of it felt creepy for creepy's sake. Like, a qualm I have, another one, is they kill a lot of dogs, and dogs always die in films, and they set up the dogs as being a guard from the demons, and then when this Mr. Hoiri, or whatever, goes off screaming into the woods, he discovers that, like, he leads the documentary maker to discover there's loads of dead, all the dogs have gone from the place where they were living with all the old villagers. Yeah. And they're all, like, dead, and there's, like, a weird perimeter with, like, possibly dead pigeon parts, and, like, something horrible is happening in the woods. And they discover that, and I just think, oh, come on, guys. You don't need to kill dogs. Every film kills dogs. Do we have to just add this in for no reason?
And it was set up, though.
How do you mean?
Like, it was set up early on, the whole thing about, like, the dogs being, like, guardians and warding off demons and stuff.
Sure, so the fact that they turn up dead. Yeah, okay, maybe it's not entirely random, but films have done it 1,000,000,000 times, and dogs dying is old news. Creepy embryos and aborted fetuses, yeah, okay, that's...
Yeah, I see what you mean. There is stuff in this film that has been done before, but at the same time, there is stuff in it that is completely new, which is part of why those things are creepy. Because, like, the demon's face and the ghost fetuses, I haven't seen that
thankfully
in a horror film I think of. Yeah, but that's why it was so unsettling, because I wasn't expecting it either. I went in the first time I watched this knowing nothing. I didn't even know what this film was.
Sure.
But I just started watching this weird fake documentary on YouTube, and then that shit started happening. I was like, wow, this is... Boy, howdy.
well, okay, coming to the part, actually, where they split up into two, I found a little bit filmically weird, motivation-wise. The documentary maker is trying to calm down this tinfoil guy, and he has to chase after him because he's running away. And they tell the camera guy to take the girl, who's fine, to just take her away or take her back in case there's a problem. And it's like, well, don't just leave one guy chasing a crazy man into the woods. You should all stay together.
That was a little bit like horror movie cliche. Let's split up for some reason.
And then he leaves the camera on, the camera guy, and puts it just in between the seats, accidentally filming this woman who then freaks out because the demon thing has caught up with her. I was all very, well, why would you continue filming her in the back of the car when you're not really filming, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, the documentary maker, maybe because he's a documentary maker, always seems to remember to pick up his camera and film. Even when his wife's setting herself on fire, he's like, I better pick this camera up, eh?
Actually, I think that was more that he was just dragging it, because he was trying to, like... Because he... One of the best parts of his performance was... That was when he gets, like, clobbered in the head with a rock.
Sure.
His performance of having been smashed in the head was probably one of the more realistic ones I've seen.
It was.
Where he just kind of lay there almost like he was having a seizure and, like, choking and trying to, like barely understand what's going on anymore because he's just had his brain smashed in. Because a lot of the time, like, someone will get hit in the head in the film and they'll be like, ugh, I got to man up and carry on. Like, but if someone hit you in the head with a rock, you'd probably shit yourself and, like... But, like, half your face goes numb. Like,
it's not, you can't, like, tough it out.
Yeah.
The guy doesn't. Anthony, we haven't heard you very much. What are you thinking of some of these points I'm trying to criticise, Jamie's trying to defend? Where would you weigh in on some of these things?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't trying to be aggressive. Well, Jamie is the one who's being aggressive.
I am kind of noticing that the problems that you are bringing up, Rich, are general horror film problems. So I won't say it's unfair.
I'm not saying it's scary. I'm finding plot inconsistencies.
Yeah, but they are typical plot inconsistencies.
Yeah, I'm just saying the ones that you are pointing out are generally ones that are in horror films. Like you said, like, oh god, they're using dogs again. It's like, well, they do that because they do that in all horror films kind of thing.
They do it in all films all the time. Dogs die. It's incredible.
Also ambiguity, I think that's kind of the point of kind of these ghost stories, because they're meant to kind of stay with you and like does... linger on. And the only way that's going to happen is if you have questions and things to answer.
That's definitely one that comes down to personal preference. Because, like, I was watching this with my wife, and it was like, it was too many open-ended questions and not enough being resolved.
I just like everything. Like, if you're making a horror film, from a storytelling perspective, not a what you're meant to true to scare people and leave people with creepy imagery, I like you to have thought about every little thing. And upon rewatching, I think some of this stuff will go, oh yeah, this ties into that and this ties in.
Yeah,
I think
it
some
is.
Of the stuff was slightly arbitrary.
Well, as that's the thing as well. Like, I'm in a different position here, because this is like the fourth time I've watched this, and I am still picking up on stuff that I didn't before. But it is one that, like, if you're gonna like it, you kind of have to like it a lot and to want to rewatch it and then tie it. But, like, it made more sense to me now the fourth time than it did, like, the previous times. Every time I watch it, it makes more sense because stuff starts to connect together. And I think that's a strength and a weakness. Like, it's a weakness in terms of just being, like, finding an audience, because it's long and it's bleak and there's nothing fun necessarily. And it's not...
Unless you find like anything about abortions funny, like I did. To me, it was hilarious comedy, because I have such a horrible mind.
Like, it's not gripping in the sense that, like, even, like, the Blair Witch Project or something like that would be...
I thought it was quite intriguing, actually. Because in comparison to the thing it was being like, documentaries about paranormal, there's always people reaching for the paranormal because stuff is explainable, or the stuff that isn't explainable isn't proof of anything. And in this, it implied the proof was there. So it was more interesting than a normal paranormal tale, which is always poppycock.
This film is the fantasy for people who... like, watch ghost documentaries and go, well, it is a lot of shit, doesn't it? Like, whereas, like, this film, it's, what if there was one and it all actually happened and there was proof? And it's like, oh, yes, finally. Like, that's one of the things that makes this, you know, interesting to me. It's because I wish, you know, as much as I don't believe in, like, ghosts and all that stuff, I would love to. Because
a couple of these crazy guys, it'd be good if they were onto something.
Yeah, but... And that's part of the fun thing. And all, but yeah, it is very slow and it's very dense and it requires you to really like be interested already.
But the acting is very good. Like, everyone's very believable. At no point do you remember these guys are actors.
Yeah,
so you kind of go, this is just people filming a thing, and you forget sometimes you're watching. Which is a very good part of the illusion, is you do forget this is a film. You do think, oh, someone has put together all this stuff. And then every now and again, something ridiculous happens, and you go, oh, yeah. ghosts, for some reason, make the videotape go all weird and show another reality. Ooh, there's spooky voices in the recordings that can be emphasised. And this time, they really are there and have a reason rather than people hearing what they want to hear, you know?
You said all that sarcastically, and that's the stuff that's good about the film.
Yeah.
No, but, it is good. It's effective. I did find it intriguing. I was just a little... I think I was more critical of it as a piece of cinema. Did it entertain me fully? I think I'd be more pleased and I'd like it more if everything was a little more tied in well. And a few... Like, for me, there were questionable moments where, why would you be filming? Why did you choose this?
The why would you be filming thing is a problem in a lot of... I would say this is one of the maybe two where it makes sense to keep filming.
It was better than a lot of them.
The Blair Witch Project, it makes perfect sense that she keeps filming because she's obsessed with capturing everything on film. And address it in the film where, like, they turn the camera on her and it's like, you're still filming. Why are you still filming? We're in actual trouble. What is wrong with you? So that, you know, it makes sense because, you know, she's obsessed with it. Yeah. And it makes sense in this, I think, because he's the same. He is... through and through, he's a documentary filmmaker. He has to get everything, no matter what it is. Yeah. It makes a little bit less sense for the cameraman to be filming everything.
Also, why is he not cursed? He got off scot-free, didn't he?
That's something that I found when I was reading about it on IMDb. There's debate, because nothing's mentioned about the cameraman, whether or not he died as well.
Well, we see him. I thought he was part of the production team that would have received the last bit of tape.
It doesn't mention. No, it doesn't. It doesn't mention him.
All right. So maybe he was behind it all, right, guys?
Absolutely. That makes perfect sense.
But he was very caring in the brief moment we saw his specked face helping a girl who freaks out by a bank or something.
Yeah, he doesn't talk very much.
No, but that cameramen are supposed to, you know, shut up and point in the right place. He's a very, very believable cameraman.
Yeah, he's very professional.
So, you know, I was just slightly trying to challenge mainly you, Jamie, on some of the points that you like, just because I found myself liking it generally, but not falling in love with it. Not that you can fall in love with it. It's obscenely creepy. It really got creepiness, and it got subtlety, and it didn't boringly do the same as all horror films. And those are the things I liked about it, and I thought it was believable. This is kind of me trying to sum it up, I think. So I'll try and think of a rating as well. So I would say, overall, if this is kind of what Japanese horror can do, then I think it's successful. I think it's more interesting than so many other rubbishy horror films and found footage and documentary spoofs and stuff. So I think they did a lot with something that was fairly low budget. Very compelling, very creepy. I had some problems. We've heard them. So I cautiously think I liked it. And I think if it's anything, it's her creepy face of a baby, because it's horrible, but it's still a baby, so it's great. I don't know.
Good job.
What can I say? I feel like I have to make a terrible abortion reference again, and it's just, no. I don't know. It's very much not an abortion, anyway. It has come to life, and it has grown up into a creepy child. It is the creepy child of this director. And it has grown up and fulfilled its potential as horrible and scary. And, you know, maybe when it gets older, it'll be even creepier. I don't know.
Perhaps we should just start ranking stuff on a scale of 1 to 10.
It is 7 out of 10 dead babies. No, it's like... on the scale of 1 out of 10 dead baby monkeys, it is 7 dead baby monkeys. How's that? That's nice.
Okay.
I'll let you guys say some more stuff, because I'll just say horrible things.
Yeah, I think this is a really strong film, although really, really niche. So I don't know what kind of ground it can cover, like audience-wise, and how many people are going to see it. Which is a bit of a tragedy, because it is really good. Like Jamie said, it's one, if not the only kind of found footage film that I've seen where you can just go along with it and you're not questioning everything that they show you. Like, oh my God, that wouldn't happen, or that wouldn't happen, or this is not how you do it.
Why are they acting so terribly?
Yeah. The acting's good. Most of the characters are either creepy or believable.
The young girl and the young woman who are psychic are very likable as well. And she gets a kind of happy ending because she's seemingly been left alone by the demon as she gets older, the actress.
That's true.
Everyone else dies horribly.
And I don't know how much it adds to it, but the fact that it is a Japanese film and they're going around pretty much at like ground level in like these like other suburbs or small villages or big cities, and it's showing you real like Japanese life, but still to a non-Japanese audience that's really kind of odd and weird. Yeah. So I don't know how much that kind of affects how creepy the whole film is.
Yeah.
There's a few moments where they're showing clips from like TV shows.
Yeah.
And they're all really kind of low quality, horrible
cable TV
shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I assume there is a lot of that going on in Japan, because we have like the similar things here.
Yeah.
But I don't know, just little touches like that of I don't know if it's
the foreign setting makes it more intriguing to you think? A different culture.
Yeah, because it's because it is slightly strange and different as well.
It's
that kind of helps to the whole creepiness.
It's not the same stuff as like Catholic demons and stuff as well.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know, like, would it be different for a Japanese audience? Would it be like a slightly more familiar creepiness?
I think it's got more of a following in Japan than it has here, because it got, you know, it got a proper release and it got quite a lot of critical acclaim. Not acclaim necessarily, but like a positive reception. Particularly in when it came out in 2005, which was at the time when, you know, Japanese horror was really kind of saturating the market with a particular type, you know, with the success of like Ring and all that stuff. It was getting more and more like, we have problems, you know, with Western horror films where they all end up being the same after a while. Like, for, you know, you'll get films that are all horror films that are all slashers, or, you know, awful just torture porn stuff like Saw and Hostel or whatever, and suddenly everything's that. So this was one of those films that broke out of that and all found footage, you know, so everything's found footage. This was one of the films that like broke out of that a little bit, and it got quite a following because of that. So I think it's a little bit more recognised in Japan than it is here.
Yeah.
Okay. But saying that, you know, it's not perfect. There are some... Well, that's the thing. It's like there's the constant struggle with films like this between, do I make the best film that I can, or do I make the most real-looking film that I can, if you know what I mean?
Sometimes it's very hard to watch the shoddy, I guess, 2004 amateur cam stuff, because it's a little too blurry at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like the pace is a little off. It's it's got some very slow moments. And I watched this with someone, and they weren't particularly enjoying it because it was a bit slow. And so, not perfect, but pretty good. I mean, for a found footage film, this pretty much was like kind of low on the scale. And to be as good as it is, it's kind of incredible to me.
They did a lot. They did a lot with what they could do. They really like came up with a lot of stuff that is unsettling and intriguing a lot of the time. Even when it was being slow, you still were like, "Yeah, go on, go in the house, have a look.
Yeah.
Oh, it's kind of scary, isn't it? Oh, it's really creepy."
You can't help but just be like, every 10 minutes, just kind of turn to the person next to you and go, "Do you reckon this is what's happening? Do you reckon this? No, this is what's going to be happening.
Sure,
that's not what it's about. No."
Kind of. I know, but the problem is, unless you're watching it with the right sort of person, that other person is like, "I don't care. I stopped watching it like 20 minutes ago. It's just boring."
In fairness, if anyone within the first 5 minutes goes, "No, do you know what I reckon it's about? I reckon it's about an old village ritual that eventually goes wrong, and the demon gets the possession of a woman who spent her life dedicated to getting aborted fetuses for a medium that she's kidnapped, who is a child, and it's about her trying to please the demon so it can fulfill its evil. I think that's what it's about." And you go, "Shut up, it's not that. Oh my god, how did you know?" If they guess that, I mean, it'd be pretty random. It's a pretty weird conclusion to get. I don't know that it telegraphed anything too much.
Yeah, but I think for most kind of horror fans, I think the pace will be less of a problem.
Sure.
Which is weird because I forgot to mention beforehand, because some of the most engaging scenes that I found that I just kind of couldn't take my eyes off the screen were when he finds kind of like an historian, and all he's doing is just explaining the history of the village and the ritual, and that was the most kind of engaging part for me.
Yeah.
I
agree with that. Those were some of my favourite scenes as well.
It makes you want to look up traditional, you know, it kind of makes you curious about history, because, you know, so many villages and places, the further back you go, the weirder people were to solve problems. I mean, in Britain, I was in St. Fagan's, which is a kind of living museum. I don't know. It's like loads of old-fashioned houses all in one area. And you basically go around all these old-fashioned cottages, and in some of them there's people telling you the history. And there was this thing in one of the cottages. There was the woman standing in the chimney fireplace area, and she starts explaining that Yeah, in the olden days when they put chimneys in houses, people thought demons used to come down the chimneys. So what they did is they put their shoes up in the chimney, and then that would trick the demons into thinking the shoes were the people, and they would attack the shoes and not us then. And it's like, how did you come to that mad conclusion? Like, how did this occur? When did this start? You know, and people who were mad back in the day, and it makes you want to learn about the kind of crazy old traditions and stuff that people had, and that they were interesting in the film. These little snippets of, I guess, fake history or whatever.
Yeah. So if we're going by numbers now.
We're going by every film, even other ones that aren't like, even rom coms will have the dead baby monkeys out of 10. How many dead baby monkeys out of 10, Anthony?
Or your
own rating system.
I'd say 8.5. That's a bit grim, isn't it?
I think it's pretty grim.
not just 8 dead baby monkeys. Half one is
awesome. The ghost of one.
I'd say the film's only let down by its pace and its nicheness, I suppose. So, yeah, 8.5 sounds about right.
Okay. Jimmy, how many baby monkeys, dead baby monkeys, out of 10?
I'm going to up it by half and say 9. But with an addendum that it's like, that is my own personal rating. Because this is one of those films that almost seems like it was made specifically for me and my interest and sensibilities. Like,
and your interest in abortion, so.
Well, no, my preferences with like horror and
give
ghost story.
Me The Exorcist again, but with Japanese women instead. I want The Exorcist. It was so creepy. I love that film. Oh, it's like The Exorcist because it's creepy and weird stuff and children.
I like other horror films as well.
But this one gives you everything you like about The Exorcist in a new format.
It's very subtle, and it's the kind of, I really like fake documentaries more than found footage.
More than real documentaries. Who needs fact?
Well, yeah, to be honest. But because I like its presentation with mundane everyday things and then something being wrong or off. Sure. I agree with, like, I can see your criticisms and why, like, people who want things to come together more at the end would be frustrated, because it does leave a lot of questions unanswered. I think that's a stylistic choice, but at the same time, I think it makes sense that a lot of people just don't like that and find it frustrating. And I agree with Anthony's criticism as well, that it's, for a lot of people, it would be too slow. Even for me, it was too, like, there are times when I start, like, okay, you could speed this up a little bit. Like, that's why I wouldn't give it, like, 10 dead baby monkeys, because it's, it paces itself a little bit too, it's a little bit too leisurely a pace.
But then you also kind of need those scenes where you ask around neighbours, yeah, and they're like, I don't know, go away. You need that.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, the problem is, like Anthony said, you kind of have to pace it like that to make it seem like a real documentary.
Yeah.
Like, you can't cut it down and make it more streamlined, because that makes it too movie and too fake.
Yeah.
So it's one of the things that I admire the filmmaker for sticking to the fact that he wanted to make a fake documentary, to the point where he doesn't care about, like, necessarily pacing it quickly or whatever. And it does make scenes where, like, shit kicks off that much more effective. Hmm. Because suddenly everything's gone crazy after a long time of just, like, investigating and, like, oh, no, that stuff is actually really weird compared to the fairly subdued stuff we've been seeing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it is, though, it's very much for horror fans. Like, it's not a general audience film, just because I think a lot of people almost justifiably just wouldn't have the patience for it, because it's like recommending somebody read Lord of the Rings. You know, it's good, but, like, I don't like it. I don't like the book Lord of the Rings. Like, it's boring dreck, but, like, it's
hey, no, we're not reviewing Lord of the Rings.
Well, no, but it's like, it's got, its fan base, and it's entirely justified. And I think people would say the same thing about this film. They would tune out and they'd be like, this is dull as shit. Why are you making me watch this? But like, I love it. And I think people who like ghost documentaries, whether they believe it or not, would really enjoy this. People who like found footage and fake documentaries, and people who just like horror, particularly like H.P. Lovecraft, eldritch horror stuff.
And maybe even crazy Christians who want to outlaw abortions could show this to people, and they would make you think twice about sacrificing your potentially feeding a demon with your decision to abort Jeff's baby because you were both drunk. And let's face it, none of us want Jeff to have a baby in this world. What were we thinking? Maybe less tequilas next time, yeah? But, you know, it might put people off abortions. It might be... Maybe that was a subtle message. Abortions are terrifying and horrible because of the consequences of this crazy woman, anyway.
It's definitely, like, it's definitely, you know, the idea of, like, aborted fetuses and...
It's a very dark area of horror. When you deal with unborn babies and death and demons... Like, people have lost children and people have had abortions, and it must be a very sad process that you don't want, you know, it is, brought back up to the surface again. So it would be very challenging.
For such a kind of subtle, I don't even want to call it a horror film, like a ghost story film, it is viciously bleak, like under the surface.
Hmm. And so many people die. I mean, it's really hard going. And the demon is still out there. This poor documentary maker is... either dead or at large and crazy. Possibly he's the next guy in a tinfoil suit, you know.
Yeah.
It's properly dark. So that, I think that's something we almost forget watching it. Because the three of us, we could take some bleak stuff, you know. We're used to cinema being challenging and depressing and dark. You kind of forget that this is really horrible stuff. On just the concept of it, you know. Some of the parts of it are just really disturbing.
Yeah.
A lot of children who are, like, die, you know, die or are kidnapped. Do you know what I mean? It's super dark. So that's probably what, like, you know, a haunted house full of vampires or werewolves or whatever stupid crap you want to put in a horror film. Even a serial killer, you know, is light in comparison to this kind of almost Satan worshipping dead children stuff. You know, that's properly dark. Which I'm glad I've made light of it a bit.
So, good film. Fun stuff for all the family.
Hey, it is. It's all right. So you've got to be challenged sometimes. You've got to be freaked out, creeped out, and saddened and sickened. And mildly amused by chubby documentary makers and their crazy tinfoil-wearing friends. Yeah. Right, so, you know, we're going to put on our tinfoil jackets and hats and... maybe sleep in Mum and Dad's bedroom tonight. but hopefully you've joined us for something less horrible. And actually, no, I've remembered what it is, and it's a Matthew Perry rom-com next. So it's going to be equally horrible and terrifying. See you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.